call with Temple of Health Radio Show, and today we're pleased to be interviewing Dr. Jonathan Ellerbe, who is the author of Return to the Sacred and Spiritual Program Director for the Canyon Ranch Health Resorts. Today we're interviewing him on a CD series, Your Spiritual Personality, Finding the Path That's Right for You. And we're very pleased to be presenting this material for many people right now are considering a spiritual practice, even outside of their organized religious practice if they have one. And this is a great reference to help one decide what path is right for them. Hello, Jonathan. How are you?
Hello. I'm very good. How are you today?
I'm doing well.
Good.
All right. Where are you calling from?
I am calling from Tucson, Arizona, and I work primarily at the Tucson Canyon Ranch property.
Great. So
I take it from where I live.
I take it you don't have snow there now?
Well, we can see a little bit in the distance on the mountains.
On the mountains.
Yeah,
okay.
About
great.
As close as we get.
Great. Well, I was real pleased to listen to your CD series. I really don't know any other work that addresses the, you know, this in a step-by-step guide that you put together here. Can you tell me where you got your inspiration for this?
Yeah, well, it's interesting because just before we got on the show, I know you and I were talking about health, and I think health is absolutely a topic we have of interest in common. And so in my work, I have been both interested in the spiritual traditions of the world and the, you know, religious traditions of the world, what makes them unique and what do they uniquely have to offer people just in terms of philosophy and just in terms of a fascination with culture. But I've also been interested in health and cultural perspectives on health. And what I've come to feel very strongly over the years is that a spiritual practice is more than a luxury, that a spiritual practice is more than just for people who are religious or even self-titled spiritual, but it's actually an important ingredient of wellness. And yet, when I try to talk to people of diverse backgrounds about that perspective, you know, I often get pretty blank looks or people come up with lots of more questions than they have answers. And the questions are usually around, well, I hear the message that spirituality is important. I see the research that says that people who have spiritual practices live longer and get sick less and so on, but how am I supposed to figure it all out?
Right.
And I think it was really just a response to the people I work with and the people I speak with in seminars and a desire to kind of give people a simple way to find practices, regular exercises and activities that will help them to achieve a sense of peace, meaning, and clarity.
So in your work, you divide things into things of the mind, things of the body, and things of more emotional. I think that's a great way to do it because some of us are very, you know, mental, some are very emotional, and others are very physical, and all paths are equally good. I mean, I don't think there's anything that says one is more effective or better than another, but it just is, you can tailor it, and then you can, I like your suggestion that you should try paths that are uncomfortable to you so that you can maybe expand things out further.
Yeah, and I think what you're highlighting for people is what I call spiritual personality.
Right.
And so there's two pieces, I think, you know, that I would just want to comment on. One is that I think I observed a lot of times people making comments about what didn't work for them with frustration. So they'd say things like, well, everyone in my family goes to church, and I may still be Christian, but I just don't feel what I'm supposed to feel at church. Mm-hmm. But for some reason, I feel it when I'm in nature, or for some reason, I feel it when I go to a yoga class.
Right.
And conversely, I'd hear other people say, all my friends are taking meditation classes, and they love it, but I hate it, and do I have to meditate to be a peaceful
person? It's torture.
Yeah, it's torture to me. And so, you know, if we step back and think of ourselves and the people we know, we realize that just as we all have different tastes in music and food and friends and places where we want to live and the kinds of sports we enjoy, we actually have different spiritual practices, or you might say techniques or exercises, that are either going to work better for us or worse for us, or lesser for us, you
right.
might say. But you highlighted a second point, which is, if this is all sounding really new to you, you know, for the people listening, I always say, start by pursuing the things that are most attractive
mm-hmm.
and most comfortable and get you most quickly to the experiences you want to have.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, don't think that's the end of the journey.
Right.
Because for a lot of us, that can then fall into a kind of habit
mm-hmm.
of exercise where we keep doing what's familiar actually to escape, you know, having to really
mm-hmm.
face ourselves or really listen to what's going on inside ourselves. And
mm-hmm.
so absolutely, I do encourage people to try things that are different as well.
I was having a conversation with somebody just the other day about what spiritual practices made us uncomfortable. And I relayed this story to him that I was driving in my car one time and I was playing drumming, and you shouldn't do that while driving in your car, because
right,
if you go out of body like I do, I just wasn't really in my car. But then I decided to listen to something else, so I listened to Tibetan chanting.
Mm-hmm.
And what it did, this chanting brought up all sorts of really negative feelings in me. I mean, very visceral negative feelings. And I feel what was happening, and now I can listen to it fine, but I think the first time I listened to it, it was stimulating something in me that was really bringing up a lot of deep stuff, maybe, you know, stuff from way back when, you know, maybe even before I can remember. And that is similar to what I think that people feel when they're in doing a spiritual practice, maybe for the first time, and it's starting to bring stuff up. But that's actually a good sign. You shouldn't back away from that. You should be happy about that. Because then if that stuff's coming up for you, then you can release it and increase your overall spiritual vibration.
That's so. Exactly right. In fact, it's a perfect example of something that I so frequently encounter in my work at Canyon Ranch, which is people who will come to me saying, I think this stuff must not work for me. Because when I sit down to meditate, I don't experience peace and bliss.
Right.
The
opposite.
I experience my mind spinning, and I got 1,000 things to do. And I say,
yeah.
Well, actually, that's the first stage of the process.
Mm-hmm.
So people don't realize that it's not like an on-off switch. And what they're going to experience first in any good spiritual practice or any well-suited
mm-hmm.
spiritual practice is an expanded sense of self-awareness. And if discomfort is what's showing up, or unpleasant thoughts, or distraction,
mm-hmm.
then I try to remind people, you know, that's actually been going on all day.
Right,
behind
you're just aware of it.
You've been doing, you're just aware of it now. So
yeah.
think of your spiritual practice as a tool to tune your attention so that you can start to sense more of what you might say going on inside.
Yeah, I ask people not to try to stop their thoughts, because that doesn't work for too many people. I tell them just to observe and then just watch from a different viewpoint. And it's really funny, because I've had people who, and even friends of mine, who I had problems for years, and I just gave them a few technique suggestions, and boom, they can fall asleep. Boom, they can meditate. You know, it's like just a couple of, you just shift them just a little bit,
mm-hmm.
and it becomes very easy, and then you can overcome some pretty resistant problems, you know, insomnia being one of the ones that is often a result of the monkey mind, or the, you know,
mm-hmm.
the thoughts circling around forever. So to be able to quiet your mind is a really good thing. I actually think that I go around with my mind quiet a lot of times, and I didn't realize it until one of my friends kept asking me, kind of in an annoying way, what are you thinking? He would just ask me, what are you thinking? And then when I thought about it, I realized I wasn't thinking about anything. But if you can stay on this thing of not thinking about anything, what you do is you receive outside impressions really well. So you actually go through your day with a lot of kind of clairvoyant, intuitive impressions that are true. And so what I tell people is, if you're in monkey mind or thinking all the time, then you're in entrancement, not receive. And we want to go around and receive, because that's our spiritual protection.
So let me ask you a question then, and turn
mm-hmm.
the tables. Was it always like that for you, or do you think that developed over time?
Well, when I was small, I would know things that, you know, then came true. People who shouldn't have died, dying, and, you know, just things that I've, not everything, just some things.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's important for people to understand that clairvoyants don't get premonitions on everything, even stuff with themselves. If they're not supposed to know, they're not told, you know.
Right.
So we get surprises as well. But in general, what happened with me is I was with I was moved to Atlanta, and there was a clairvoyant in town who was told in meditation to find a surgeon named Susan. So she called around to all the hospitals and found me, and then she came and brought me Barbara Brennan's book, Hands of Light, and said, you're a healer, and you need to get started. And so I'd always gone into meditation and asked my inner guidance what to do, and I heard, quit your job. Of course, that freaked my partner out because I was making a really good living as a plastic surgeon. So I did. I quit my job and for 5 months did what I was guided to do, which was vegetarian diet, walking a lot, digging in the earth to ground, because you have to ground when you start bringing a huge amount of energy. I studied with this clairvoyant group twice a week in session, and then developed to a whole nother level. And I think that that was my, you know, kind of my college course in spirituality. And
well,
then I went back to work. And
wow,
you know,
what a great story. And, you know, I have to say, for people who are listening, that I feel similarly, and I feel like a similar pattern can unfold for anyone. I you know, it started off with your ability to listen, and this idea that there is actually something to hear, you know what I mean?
Yeah, right.
A lot of people today are caught up in this notion that if I listen, it's just going to be the projections of my mind. It's just my fantasy.
It can be. I mean, it can be.
True.
You have to seek guidance.
Yeah, that's right. But if you can listen long enough or cultivate your ability, then really all the steps get laid out for you. And I can say, though my experience has been very different than yours, in a similar kind of process and pattern, the results have also been fantastic just by learning to trust and discern and follow what I think we're calling our intuition. But, you know, other people might call their gut feelings or their heart or their soul or their passion, you know. Sometimes we get caught up in the names, you know.
Yeah, it's all a matter of trusting what you know. Carolyn Mace has a great example in one of her books that her brother is a stockbroker. And
she says
some of the best intuitives in the world work the stock market. they're sitting there with their cigarettes and their coffee and their intensity, and they're just doing what they do. And they're doing it very well. So, you know, to think that you have to be vegetarian, that you have to do this and you have to do that and you can't smoke. And I mean, you shouldn't smoke for other reasons, but it's just not true that you become definitely more intuitive if you do certain things. I think what you need to do is just follow your guidance. So I was guided to quit smoking. I was guided to, you know, become vegetarian for at least 20 years. I'm not now, but during this unfoldment, I was definitely vegetarian. But my path is not everybody's path. I'm a type A blood type, and I'm, you know, a type O might very well eat meat.
Right.
So I think it's important for people to understand that every path that they have is an individual path, and that if they're not sure of what to do, I always ask for a sign. And I've got a great story that I've shared before, but I'll tell you since I haven't told you. It's really a great thing. A friend of mine who was a doctor who was fairly irresponsible with money asked me if she could borrow money. And so I didn't know. I mean, I just didn't know whether I was supposed to lend her money or not lend her money. So I asked for a sign. And that night I was watching Saturday Night Live, and this guy came up with a sign, you know, one of those cardboard signs, and it says, I have spent all my money. Give me some of yours. So I called her up and told her no. So
that's
never doubt,
point.
Isn't that great? Never doubt that the universe can give you a sign.
That's funny.
Because
no,
it
I
can.
Have a friend.
It can.
She gets all her signs from license plates.
Isn't that great?
And when she first told me this, I thought, oh, well, you know, sometimes people can take these things too far. Like, how much communication, you know, could a license plate give you? And then she gave me, an example. She said, well, I asked my mom, who's passed over on the other side, you know, what I should do about this, you know, project, and, you know, is it, you know, should I take the job or should I not take the job?
Right.
And, you know, I was just sitting there outside my current job in the parking lot, just kind of just feeling really lost and trying to make a decision. And I just don't know if I should take the new job, like say yes or say no. She says, a car pulls in. Beside me, I look in the rearview mirror, and as it pulls in, I notice it's got a customized plate. And I thought I saw what it said, but I had to get out of the car to look. And the license plate was "Say Yes."
Really?
And she said, it's
That's
not
so
like,
weird.
It's not sort of weird combinations of letters and numbers. It's personalized license
right.
plates that are talking to her. So, hey, you know, when people hear these stories, they're often, you know, well, I don't have that experience. But you know what? I think we all have our own ways of getting the signs. And interestingly, for me, it's always been animals.
Right. Oh,
and
I
dream
I
about
animals. Yeah.
Or I'll see, you know, animals in the strangest places. You know, I had three baby skunks walk in front of my office door one day.
Isn't that great?
You know, a bobcat appear in the middle of nowhere. A white owl once on the in the middle of the road, in the middle of the summer, after a dream about a white owl when I was trying to make a decision about buying a house.
Right.
So they may sound fantastical to some, but I think, you know, what we're both saying is you got to be open to it, to see it. You know, ask for that guidance and then see what shows up and see how it shows up for you, because it won't be the same for everyone.
It won't, but I often drive home around midnight, and there's a lot of animals out then. And I live in a, you know, in a country club type community. It's like we're not really near the wilderness at all. And what's interesting is I'm coming down the road, I'll hear, now be careful, there's going to be a deer come out suddenly. And then sure enough, a deer comes out. And you know, when one comes out, there's more behind it sometimes.
Right.
And you have to really be careful, because they can run right out in front of you and you can hit them. And I can't believe all the wildlife in this neighborhood. There's foxes, and the foxes just sit there and stare at you. I mean, they stare at you for 10 minutes. They just look at you. They don't, they're not afraid. And there's just, there's like a turkey vulture that comes around, and he just looks like he's annoyed all the time. but, you know, I just love all these animals. I don't know that, but I don't know if all my neighbors see these animals. You know, I think maybe it's because I love to see animals.
Well, I think that's actually a good point. I do love to see animals as well. And it's kind of, if I can take this sort of conversation in a, just a step in another direction, you know, what it just so highlights for me, and I think you found this was very central in the book Return to the Sacred, or at least in the beginning chapters, you know, I actually do believe that having practices, spiritual exercises or spiritual practices, are ultimately a way to cultivate, you know, intuition, that they are directly linked.
Oh, I know that.
And, you know, the clairvoyants or the people that I know who do it for a living, you know, actually work as clairvoyants or psychics and so on, that actually have, you know, good reputations and track records, very often talk about how they have either in their formation over time or currently cultivate their gift by keeping the mind clear, keeping the heart healed, and doing these things through meditation, tai chi, yoga, you know, simple spiritual exercises, actually to open their intuition.
And I think now, I tell people who are really ready for, you know, a more intense spiritual practice that, you know, open themselves up to the idea of a group, because, you know, group meditation is a wonderful way to really accelerate your spiritual growth. Meditating with a group of like-minded people is just so much more effective, like, say, on a weekly basis, is so much more effective to jumpstart you. Not that you shouldn't still do your daily meditation or your daily spiritual practice, whatever that is, but there's nothing like the energy of the group to really help you. And then also, if you're hearing certain things and want to get confirmation, to get it in the setting of the group is also a lot safer than, say, you know, just trying to figure it out on your own.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, in fact, I think that there's a little section in the book called Spiritual Traveler Tips, and it kind of highlights helping people how to balance doing something daily at home and then make sure you have something. I suggest as well, you know, maybe once a week, or I prefer once a week. If it can't be that often, I guess that's okay. But where you get yourself in the company of others, not only a group, but maybe also a teacher. And it's not only, well, for me, it's, there's a few things. You know, one is there are a lot of practices we can do wrongly, like incorrectly, even harmfully, especially the physical practices like yoga and Tai Chi.
Yeah,
there are
Kundalini yoga, especially.
Yeah, Kundalini
That's quite intense.
So you could do that at home, but if you're following the video wrong or you're following the guidebook wrong, it's helpful every now and then to have someone say, oh, okay, you're doing well, but this posture here you need to change.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Or even if you're reading scripture all the time on your own, to be in a scriptural study group so you hear other perspectives.
Right.
Because sometimes we get lost in ourselves. So I think that's important. And, you know, from to me, from more of a mental health perspective, I find that getting involved with a group that's outside your normal cycles of responsibility, like taking the kids to school, managing things at work, whatever those cycles or circles might be, you know, you get in a group that's totally unrelated, and then you kind of have a different experience of yourself, different experience of your sense of what humor, creativity, you remember parts of yourself that maybe your spouse doesn't even know or that your kids have never seen, and I think that kind of fullness can be very healing and validating.
Yeah, you know, many people really cling to routine, but routine dulls us. I mean, it dulls our emotions, dulls our physical activity because we're doing the same thing again. And I think there's suggestions in some of the spiritual books, just drive to work a different way or, you know, just whenever you can, vary it. You know, don't take the elevator, walk up the stairs, you know, just vary what you do in order not to get in such a rut. And I think when we get too much in a rut, we can introduce, you know, elements of depression and, you know, feeling that life has lost its joy. So I think it's important to do new things and to try new things. And there are many organizations around. We have the community group for Noetic Science in Atlanta.
Oh, yeah,
we've had that since 95, and every month we have a great new speaker and just really interesting information. And recently I gave a talk at the Theosophical Association or Society, and they have wonderful libraries and just great, you know, great information within their groups. And they have public lectures every Sunday. So that's once a week, and then ours is like once a month, you know, our lectures. And then you get to meet people who are on similar paths that you're on. And that's always good.
Yeah, I think so. And people are often surprised when they take the time to look. But these things are out there. And I think most people's impulse is to say, we don't have things like that where I live. Or
they don't know about them because
they
don't advertise. I mean, we don't advertise Noetic Science. You got to find us through the, you know, through the national organization.
Well, I agree. And sometimes people are a little shy of going to, let's say, a New Age bookstore and looking at the postings, or going down to the local health food store and picking up the kind of, you know, natural health magazine or something like that.
Yeah.
But sometimes we have to kind of step a little bit outside our comfort zone to find those things, or even, you know, go on the internet and put in some combinations of words maybe you haven't before. Because this stuff, I'm finding it everywhere. You know, I've done some talks in some pretty small towns in the heartland of America, you know, little towns in South Dakota and, you know, Nebraska, things like that, and astonished to find the people that will come out to the book talks or will tell me about their Reiki healing energy group or, you know, their Vipassana meditation group. I mean,
right there
in the cornfields. Where we have a lot of stereotypes about what people are open to and what they're not. So
yeah, I tell people that we have in Atlanta everything from, I had like 30 people from the First Baptist Church in my, and it was really crowded, in my exam room doing a healing on one of their one of my patients who had cancer. That was wonderful. Man, the energy just soared with that. We have Reiki groups, healing groups at the Unity churches here, where if you don't want to go to the service, you can go in this room and just do healing, you know, healing on others if you're guided to, or go in there for healing if you feel you need healing. You know, any of the New Age bookstores, or sometimes the feminist bookstores, will have study groups, meditation groups, lectures, you know, so just stop by and see what they've got on the schedule. And like you said, there's all sorts of, it's really infiltrating mainstream America. It's very interesting. You know, the New Age stuff of the 80s is now actually in the churches. Because people realize that it works. You know, they might call it a different name, but I mean, Jesus said it works, so why shouldn't we try it, you know?
Yes, and you know, a lot of the
cheaper
popular,
than drugs.
I think a lot of the popular, you know, Christian teachers even today.
Yeah.
You know, there's that fellow Joel Osteen, just immensely
popular. Oh, yeah, I love
popular.
Him. I love him.
And if you open his books,
yeah.
I mean, you pick up a Wayne Dyer book
right
beside it.
It's the same thing.
It's the same thing, and
yeah.
I say that with respect, you know, but it is very much the same
it
thing.
Is.
And what's fascinating, though, is that these... frankly, Christian, Jewish, and even Muslim leaders, although
right.
people don't know so much, that's true there as well, they're finding the evidence in their own scriptures for
right.
these messages that we're sharing. You know, if I could just mention something about a little project I have on my website that's
sure.
relevant to this. I'm doing something called the Spirituality Survey. And the question, it's a simple online survey that is basically asking four questions about people's, you might say, inner experience of spirituality,
mm-hmm.
their personal beliefs, rather than their social categories.
Right.
So
yeah.
a lot of the research that's been done in recent years around what does America believe really is asking questions about how do Americans label themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So Christian, Jewish, religious, not religious.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas this kind of steps outside that and asks people, you know, simple questions like, you know, if there's a higher power, you know, like if there's a higher power, what do you think is the best way to describe it?
Right.
You know, do you believe that there is such a thing, and what's your preferred names for it? And it's, so it's four simple questions, totally anonymous, and we have about 1,500 responses right now. We'd love people to sign up and check it out. I mean, you don't actually have to, I shouldn't say sign up, just sign in and check it out. You don't
mm-hmm.
have to give any personal information. But what we're finding, to come back to our conversation, is that what we're saying is being validated, which means people may be religious or not, affiliated with a tradition or not, even atheistic or not.
Mm-hmm.
But when they come to actually describe their feeling about the nature of, you might say, spirit in the world or these kinds of things, the answers are remarkably similar. You know, nature shows up as being the number one, by far, most sacred place
mm-hmm.
for these, you know, 1,500 people.
Right.
And yet, we don't share that conversation in the public media.
Yeah.
You know, I think a lot of us take it for granted.
Mm-hmm.
But we're looking for all these reasons to protect the environment. Well, what if it's true that 80% of Americans, I mean, I don't know if this is true yet, but this is
yeah.
what we're finding so far. What if it's true that 80% of Americans find their greatest sense of peace
mm-hmm.
and personal nourishment in nature? Well, then that alone is a reason to work to protect our natural forests and waterways
sure.
and so on. So it's very interesting, and if people want to see what those questions are or participate, they just go to my website, which is returntothesacred.com.
And do you have a lecture schedule up there or a workshop information?
You know, I'm not doing a lot in the next little while because I'm getting mm-hmm. ready for the launch of my next book, which is August, so I'm kind of doing less before I do more,
mm-hmm.
but I do have a posting of an event I'm doing in Toronto, Canada,
mm-hmm.
some stuff at Canyon Ranch, and I always feature free material for people so they don't
mm-hmm.
always feel like they're coming to a site that's selling
right.
stuff.
Yeah.
So I have an audio program right now that's all about stress management. It's got some good simple meditations, guided visualizations, stuff people can do in 5 minutes or 10 minutes,
mm-hmm.
and it's free. So they just sign on. And download, basically. No real strings attached. So
what is your next book?
The next book is called Inspiration Deficit Disorder. And
<That's cute. laughs>
it's all about how, it's really about our conversation, which is to say that when our life is not driven by our sense of inspiration, or you
mm-hmm.
might say intuition,
right.
that it compromises our vitality in all areas, even physically.
Oh, yeah, definitely physically. That's why you have the Monday morning heart attack.
That's exactly right. I mean, that's exactly the point of the book, which is whether you live long or whether your life is shorter than you expect, you really have to learn to be true to yourself, not only for the betterment of the world and your relationships and the performance and whatever you do, but also for your physical well-being.
Yeah.
So Shakespeare, hundreds of years ago, had it right when he said, "To thine own self be true." So that's what it's about. And it kind of breaks it down, though, into a little map. Actually, you'd probably find this interesting. That looks at the human being as kind of an energy being and starts giving people some language that helps them to look at how they maintain balance and how they give away power through this idea of life force, and how we're born from life force, and that our bodies are sustained by life force, and so on. So, you know, the explanation's pretty simple and straightforward, and then it's lots of very, very practical lifestyle tips that go along with it.
I want to share something from my own experience where I learned that I learned that lesson so intensely. I caught viral pneumonia. It was really interesting because I had warnings I was going to do this. I had warnings from the spirit world that I was going to, if I didn't take off 2 weeks and do nothing but rest, I was going to get deathly ill. But at the time, I had patients coming in from all over the country for breast implant removal. I take care of real sick people all over the place with infected breast implants or leaking breast implants. And so I couldn't, you know, I just couldn't do anything. So basically what happened was I got deathly ill. I mean, all of a sudden I got this viral pneumonia and really had to follow my intuition to even survive it. It was just really bad. And when you can't even get out of bed without help, I ended up being in my own house, but I had 24-hour care and my nurses, because I have kind of like a big, almost a mini hospital. So I had I had IVs, I had oxygen, I had pulse oxes, I had my doctors come here, my nurses were with me, you know, round the clock. But when you can't do anything except lay in the bed and wonder if you're going to die, like I was sitting there going, I wonder if I'm going to die. What's very interesting is that God can talk to you.
Yeah.
Because God has your total attention. And I was shown during that illness exactly what you are talking about, exactly how we are connected to that life force energy, because I had none. I mean, I it was cut off, and yet it was still there. You see what I mean? The energy wasn't there, but the guidance was there, and I had to follow the guidance step by step in order to regain my health, and it took 5.5 weeks.
Wow.
And but I learned so much. I mean, my goodness, do I understand now how this body is connected to spirit, you know. I mean, it's really interesting. And another point I wanted to make, it's so important for the listeners to understand that spiritual growth is experiential. It is not, you know, reading in books. It is not what you know. It's almost what belief systems you drop rather than which ones you pick up.
Yes, actually, you know, yes, you and I are definitely like-minded. I think that's two things. One, that's I think in the introduction there's a statement that says spirituality is an experience. You know, spirituality is not belief. And in the next book, I actually have a quote that stands out on one of the pages by Rachel Naomi Remen, a famous physician, and it says something to the effect of, I've come to believe that true healing is ultimately not about becoming something, but letting go of all the things you really aren't.
Right.
And I think that's just so eloquently said, because it's about returning to our essence. And that's, see, now this, I wonder if this is true for you and your work, but this is the most ironic challenge that I have, which is that the greatest medicine, you might say, or advice that I can give people is to do what they love.
It's true.
It's to play more and have more fun and find their passion in what they're doing. Even if it's not the perfect job, you can still find ways to enjoy it and be engaged. And yet asking people to enjoy themselves and to have fun and to do the things that give them the most engagement, not the kind of fleeting pleasure that some people immediately think of, but, you know, true sort of in-your-bones happiness and pleasure, people resist it. You know, they're so used to doing things out of obligation, mm-hmm. out of external motivation, that actually doing what is easy and fun is the hardest thing I could ask a person to do.
Yeah, it is true. And it's also important to know that if you are following this path of guidance, what you think you might be doing and what you actually do might be two very different things. I know one morning I woke up and I heard, nothing you think you're going to do today or you're going to do, you're going to do something completely different. And then that's what happened. I mean, it was just so fun. Because isn't that a nice surprise? Because I was going to get up and do all the things that I had to do that day, you know. It was
yeah.
on Saturday, you know. You know how when you're really busy, all the things go on Saturday. So all day long on Saturday, you got to do the should-dos. But something else happened. I did something totally different. Ended up out in nature, had a great time. And that's an example of that. Be open to letting spirit or God or consciousness or whatever you want to call it give you a good time. Just say, here, take a vacation day.
Yes.
Do something different.
Yes. You know, and actually when I work with families that are in
uh-huh.
that, you know, like parents and kids. And,
right.
Because you know, sometimes it's not a mental health issue. It's not a family crisis. It's just ruts, you know, for
right.
a lot of people to just, we go through the same routines. I get home, I prepare dinner,
mm-hmm.
she gets home later, or he gets home later, and then he's tired and grumpy.
Everybody's bored.
Right, makes the kids do their work. We all
yeah.
watch an hour of television, then
right.
everyone goes to bed.
Yeah, yeah.
And I say, you know, and I will encourage people, you know, maybe I learned this, maybe I taught myself this in high school when I skipped out, but I said, you know, you guys need to all call in sick.
Right.
And my favorite example is, you know, as long as it's not abusing any accountability, right?
Mm-hmm,
so if you have a big
right.
project due or if your kids
right.
have a test, but find a day where you can reasonably, safely just call in, you know, mom calls in for dad calls in for mom,
yeah, right.
parents call in for the kids, and just
take off,
yeah. Go to a
yeah.
movie.
Yeah, go to the zoo, you know.
Go to the zoo, go to a park, like just
right.
do
yeah.
anything different, but get out of the
yeah.
house
right.
and see each other in a different light, and you'd be
right.
shocked, you know, at how much that changes your life.
Mm-hmm. Well, the masters say that the purpose of the manifested worlds is Ananda. And I remind people of this. Ananda means enjoyment. So if the purpose of the manifested worlds is enjoyment and you're not enjoying yourself, I think you're missing the whole point of the whole manifestation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So those are some of the Indian masters that are
yeah.
so interesting. I think that's in The Science of God, who was Yogananda's teacher. I really like that book, The Science of God. That was his
Science
teacher.
God, I think I might actually have
yeah,
that.
Yeah, reread that. That is just so good.
Uh-huh,
it is
Yogananda.
Just, I mean, yeah, Yogananda's master.
Awesome.
He had a name, you know, about five pages long. Yeah,
yeah, Sri Yukteswar.
There you go.
Yeah, and Lahiri Maharshi.
But he wrote The Science of God, and I'm very scientific. I come from a family of scientists.
Uh-huh.
And I do believe in spiritual science. I mean, I believe that we need to test and not just believe because somebody tells us to believe. I don't. I mean, I don't believe that you can go out of body just because I read a book on it.
Right.
I believe it because the first time I went out of body, I had viral meningitis, and my head hurt so bad, I just popped out of body because I was in too much pain to stay in the body.
Yeah.
And, that, you know, people do that. Many of my patients in the ICU say they spend most of the day out of body. You know, they don't.
Well, and you know, I used to
they don't want to be in that body with all
no.
the tubes and the chest tubes and
who
the pain.
Can blame
and,
them?
Who can blame them? Exactly.
Well, and when I used to do bedside counseling for palliative patients, people end of life.
Right.
You know, you couldn't even, or at least I felt
mm-hmm.
that I could even on the outside perceive.
Mm-hmm.
When people were kind of moving in and out.
And
a lot
of
people
tunnel,
in
right.
that field talk about how they, you know, we don't necessarily spiritualize the language in hospitals, but a lot of nurses and doctors will say,
mm-hmm.
well, I don't think she's really here right now. Or
right.
she's kind of in and out today. And
that's
and what
true.
We assume they mean is in and out of consciousness. But I think that a lot of us say it and
mm-hmm.
actually mean in and out of their body.
Right, right.
And so it's again, you know, I feel this kind of kinship with you because I am what I would call a skeptical spiritual, whether you call me a seeker or a teacher or mm-hmm. whatever. But I believe that if it's real, and that's really what catapulted me on my journey as a young person, it was if it's real, then I should be able to experience this.
Exactly.
You know, and that's actually why the first, you know, big book that I wrote, you know, or in terms of a mainstream publisher, I really wanted to focus on something that give people tools
mm-hmm.
so that if, and this was something I ran into a lot in the hospitals, if they said to me, well, I don't really believe what you're saying, then my response could be, well, you don't have to believe me. Just
mm-mm.
try some of these things and see where they take you.
Right.
Yes.
Right. That's true.
Make an experiment of it. Self-science.
Mm-hmm. And I had interviewed Cindy Dale, who wrote actually a CD series. I think it's in the same catalog that yours is in, called Illuminating the Afterlife. Have you seen that?
Yeah, yeah. I haven't read it, though.
You have to listen to it. It's a CD series.
Oh,
you have to listen to it because, you know, I read the Tibetan Book of the Dead, the Egyptian Book of the Dead, and I studied a lot of stuff about, you know, afterlife spiritual, you know, I guess, agendas and things. But she has put them all together, and she's a fabulous wealth of information. So if you're still working with the hospice patients, or people facing that, this book is invaluable.
Huh.
And so I really like her work. She's coming from a place of that we're all going to eventually, hopefully, be able to get to.
Mm.
And she's a great teacher as well.
Well, it's interesting. Each comment you make takes me to a new place. As I was thinking about this, Cindy Dale.
Mm-hmm. Cindy
you know, Dale. I was thinking about some of the other people that have written in the field, and it occurred to me that, you know, whenever people ask me, well, who should I read or who should I listen to,
mm-hmm.
you know, one of the nice things that's happened with modern technology is that you can sample things and taste things. Now, the samples and the tastes aren't always accurate. You know, I'll
mm-hmm.
often go and see what sample did they give people of my book or my audio program.
Right, yeah.
Sometimes I'm happy, sometimes not that. Anything but that.
Yeah.
But I encourage people that spiritual personality is at work in literature
mm-hmm.
and with spiritual teachers as well, which means, you know, this is kind of an unpopular way to give an example because I don't mean it as an insult, but, you know, a good example is Eckhart Tolle, who became mm-hmm. a very well-known spiritual teacher teaching present moment awareness, you know,
mm-hmm.
a form of mindfulness, and became very popular through Oprah Winfrey. And so, you know, hundreds of thousands of people, actually millions of people, read
mm-hmm.
his work. And yet I can say, you know, in my encounters, it is still very common that people will come to me almost with guilt. Well, I read that book, The Power of Now. I don't know what's wrong with me. I just didn't get it, you know, and it's as if there's something wrong with them.
Yeah.
And I just say, you know, there's always going to be 1,000 people writing on every topic,
mm-hmm.
and not everyone's going to be perfect for you. So he's
right.
great for some people, and, you know, for others, he really, really just didn't work, and that's okay. It doesn't mean there's something wrong with the reader.
Right.
You know, there's other people writing about mindfulness, whether it's Jon Kabat-Zinn or Thich
mm-hmm.
Nhat Hanh. And the same thing with the afterlife material. You know, there are scientists like Gary Schwartz, and
mm-hmm.
then there's people like Alison Dubois and so on. And, you know, people just need to kind of, I think, feel their way into it. I mean, don't you agree? And kind
oh, yeah.
of find the right language and find the right fit.
I have a funny story about Jon Kabat-Zinn. I was in a bookstore with my parents, and his book was featured right at the front. And so I looked at his picture, and I said, gee, I'd like to meet him. And, you know, just that thought. And then I went on about my business, and I was real busy. I was covering 6 emergency rooms, and, I didn't have time to do anything. But I was kind of spiritually guided to go to one lecture at the hospital I was at. I was just walked in, and he was giving the lecture.
Oh, isn't that so?
Isn't that wild?
Yeah.
I was just like, I was so amazed because I just had that thought, gee, I'd like to meet him, which is probably my higher self saying, oh, you're going to be meeting him.
Right, right.
And so we had a nice little conversation. It was really fun. But yeah, there are so many teachers out there, and there are so many great books. If you want to approach spirituality from parapsychology, from, you know, strict science. There's many scientists who are mm-hmm. now reaching into the realm, you know, through cell biology, through chemistry, physics, astronomy.
Yeah.
I interviewed a great astronomer who wrote a book, Cosmic Conversations, mm-hmm. you know, interviewing 30 or 40 people on the nature of the universe, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So you can be strict science and still get in. You can be strict religion and still get in. You can be, you know, atheist and get in. It doesn't matter. I mean, you're right. There are paths through every single thing you might be interested in. If you, I used to tell people would say, well, I don't believe in astrology. And I say, well, actually, astrology is just a hook to get people into spirituality.
Right.
You know?
That's absolutely so.
It's true.
And I think that what really shapes the experience of the literature and the teachers out there is, I think that the mindset and the discernment of the what you might call the student or the seeker.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, I think, when I say right now, I mean like in this time in history, I think it's becoming more and more important that these two go together, because what I've seen, unfortunately, in my work is people are either too focused on the discernment, so no one's good enough,
mm-hmm.
everyone's scrutinized, no one has enough credentials, no one's a perfect enough being, and
yeah, they need to go read that part in the Bible about not judging.
Right, right. But the other extreme, of course, is then there's the seekers that are so hungry,
mm-hmm.
where
anything
absolutely
goes.
Everything
yeah.
is a message,
yeah.
absolutely
right.
anything goes.
Yeah.
And then it's kind of, we run into these, I think of it as like the Emperor's New Clothes syndrome, and they end
mm-hmm.
up in workshops where maybe they're being taken advantage of, maybe people's health is being put at risk,
right.
Or even are financially being exploited,
right.
and it doesn't feel right, but they continue anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I've tried to write about that, and frankly, if anyone is stuck in a situation right now
mm-hmm.
Where they're trying to be more discerning about a spiritual group or teacher they're with, I recently posted a little article with on my website with some steps. Or you might say, like, key warning signs.
Right.
You know,
that's
so
good.
Think these things are happening in your spiritual community
mm-hmm.
or with your teacher, this is time to step back,
right.
talk to an outside person. Because if we don't have a more educated approach, I don't know if that's
mm-hmm.
the right word, but a more balanced approach
mm-hmm.
to how we're seeking, both bringing willingness, enthusiasm, dedication, but also discernment,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, self-awareness and caution, we can really go down some disastrous trails.
Well, there was the Jim Jones episode.
Yeah.
You know, as an example.
Yes, exactly.
No, seriously, well, I mean, the cults exist. There's some good information on the cults on TV, too. I watched some of the stuff on, it's probably the Biography or the History Channel.
Oh, yes.
That,
I caught the end of that.
Right. And That also shows the warning signs, you know, because
yeah.
they do an in-depth documentary of what the people that, I think it was also on CNN, they did one thing remembering Jonestown. And it's always good to look at history. It's always good to see where people went astray, because at the time, most of them didn't think they were going astray.
Correct.
You know, it was a mass kind of a hypnosis type thing that only a few escaped from. Yeah.
Well, and I've been somewhat tragically involved in being a consultant, or I guess you might say a media voice,
mm-hmm.
on this incident that happened in Sedona, Arizona, where whatever motivational speaker James Ray had
mm-hmm.
this version of a sweat lodge ceremony, and people died, and people went
mm-hmm.
to the hospital.
Right.
And because I'm very involved in those exact kinds of ceremonies and
mm-hmm.
do them very regularly, I've been asked to, you know, comment a lot. And
right.
and so I've, you know, as I say, sadly, you know, become involved. And, you know, a lot of questions come up for people, which is how is it that so many people can get so far into distress with so many others unaware of it or unwilling to say something? And I don't think it's about people not being good people, or
mm-hmm.
I don't think it's, you know, that they wanted anyone else to suffer. I don't think that's true. But, you know, you touched on this idea of sometimes we get caught up in a bit of a group mentality, and
mm-hmm.
that can be it. sometimes I think that the Western ambitious mindset collides with the practices of the East and the indigenous world, and suddenly we apply the same kind of ego striving that can make us a CEO or the leader in a field, and we're applying it to, you know, a spiritual practice. Like,
it doesn't work.
I'm going to get to the end of this.
I'm going to be the best.
Yeah, I mean,
all right.
We use the metaphor, I'm going to get to the end of this if it kills me.
And that's not good.
You know, and it's a very strong metaphor, but at some level there's this sense of will, as opposed to remembering that in, I think, in the Eastern and indigenous traditions, and frankly in the original Western traditions as well, there was always the idea of grace.
Right.
Which means, remember, folks, you can only push this so far. The universe or God or whatever you call it is going to have to play a role. And it's not just your will or determination that's going to make this happen. And that's, I think it's an interesting kind of philosophy that's emerged in the kind of personal growth and modern spiritual movement that has a wonderful message at the core, which is that we are co-creators of our reality.
We are.
And
that's
that
so
we,
true.
You know, every experience is a lesson, and that we can learn from everything, and that we can attract things into our life, all of which I'm sure you would agree are very important rules to live by. And yet, when we attach ego to it, or when we attach expectation or striving, then all of a sudden these very same empowering beliefs can be quite, I'd even say, dangerous, because we think that all things are equal for everyone, and I don't know, they're really not.
Each path is individual, and that's why you don't judge another person's path. Well, we're coming to the end of our hour. We've had a really great conversation with Dr. Jonathan Ellerbe on his CD set, Your Spiritual Personality, Finding the Path That's Right for You. And if you would go, can you give your website one more time, Jonathan?
Yeah, very often it's listed as jonathanellerbe.com, but if you're listening somewhere where you can't write it down, it's easier to remember returntothesacred.com, returntothesacred.com, which is the name of my book. And there's lots of free goodies on the site, so I hope you'll come visit.
And I want to interview you on your new book, so when that's released, would you please let us know? And
we'll
be sure to get you on for that one. And I just want to mention, before we go out, that next week we'll be interviewing Michael Brown, The Presence Process, A Healing Journey into Present Moment Awareness. And then, actually, the next week, I will be interviewing Stephanie Marone on her compilation work, The Goddess Book. I'm actually one of 42 authors in that book, including Angelina Jolie, Jane Fonda, Oprah, Jay Rawlings, Michelle Obama. It goes on and on. It's great. And I'm doing medicine in that. But I'm going to interview her on the book because she's the editor. And then the next week we have Consciousness is All, Now That Life is Completely New. And then we're going to have Dr. Horowitz on to talk about what the updates on the flu pandemic. And that'll be on 3/20. Every month, of course, we have Noetic Science. And on the 18th of March, we're very pleased to have Tricia McCannon with her new book, The Jesus Mysteries. Actually, the title's a lot longer than that. But this is a great book on what happened with Jesus between his early years and his ministry, and all of the information about the sacred schools of initiation that he intended, and just a fabulous book that is new material. And I love new material. I think new material is great, and it will probably revolutionize the thinking of what Jesus was and how he came to do what he came to do. So that'll be in Noetic Science, and her book will be coming out in March on Hampton Roads. Will be having her book in March. Well, thanks, Jonathan. It was great talking with you.
Well, thank you very much. It's been my pleasure, and I'm actually really eager to talk again.
Great. Well, we'll do that. This is Susan Kolb with Temple of Health Radio Show, and we'll be back next week.
you had plastic surgery, Bill?
You bet I did. I got tired of the wrinkles around my eyes and decided to have Plastikos do something about them.
But I didn't think men had plastic surgery.
Get with it, Bob. Men want to look their best, too. There's nothing wrong with getting a little help from Plastikos to look on top of your game. A lot of guys are doing it, my friend.
Well, I don't know about this.
Look, you see the difference Plastikos made with me. I look better and I feel better. My Plastikos surgery was an investment in me.
So where is Plastikos?
Plastikos is in Dunwoody. Plastikos is staffed by pros who guarantee you personal attention. The Plastikos number is 770-457-4677. Mention this ad for a free consultation. Financing is available. 770-457-4677.
Please join us every Saturday morning for Temple of Health Radio Show, brought to you by Plastikos and Millennium Healthcare. Our holistic medical practices in Atlanta are committed to community education. Our shows bring you national authors on topics of health alternatives, new scientific breakthroughs, and spiritual medicine.